Welcome back to Ag Day, presented by Skiles Electric on WILO, Boom 1027, and HoosierLandTV.com. It's also brought to you by the Community Foundation of Howard, Clinton, and Carroll County, the Farmers Bank, Wampler Services Incorporated, Rossville Consolidated School District, Drago, Indiana, and First Farmers Bank and Trust. And I'm kind of excited to have this next guest in here because we hear him a lot on the radio. We talk to him a lot when we get the chance. But Eric Pfeiffer is here, President and News Director of Hoosier Ag Today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. I mean, you're always running. It's like you never sit still.
I mean, I've got to move somewhere. I can't just stay home all the time.
Well, I was going to say you're like a toddler, but yet you're not a toddler.
Well, I mean, I work from my basement. People don't know this. Like, so at Hoosier Ag Today, we all work from our basement. We've got studios in our house. We worked from home before working from home was cool. So I just oftentimes am having the best conversations down there because I'm all by myself. You know, those are the best conversations, are with yourself. But, you know, sometimes it's good to get out. Sometimes it's good to, you know, talk to people, see people. As much as they may not like to see me sometimes, I like to see them. But I appreciate the invite here today. I think this will be fun.
Well, we're glad you came, and I get that, talking to yourself. My mom always said sometimes that can be the only intelligent conversation you have that day.
Amen.
So, Eric, for people who aren't familiar with Hoosier Ag Today, give us a little introduction as far as who you are, how you got there, and
sure.
What Hoosier Ag Today really is.
So, Hoosier Ag Today, we celebrate 20 years on the air later this year. We're planning a big shindig, like we're doing it up big. We're really happy about 20 years in the industry, bringing news, weather, market information to farmers, growers, agribusinesses, politicians even, through our radio network, through our digital properties, our newsletter that we send out every day, social media. We've been doing it for 20 years now. We are on over 70 radio signals across Indiana, including WILO and the several different signals you have. And we certainly appreciate that partnership that we have with you here in the Clinton County and surrounding areas. We talk what the different conditions are for farmers. We like to head around the state and see what different things are happening for farmers in northern Indiana, central Indiana, western, eastern, southern. We like to kind of go around the state and get different perspectives because I think farmers are, yes, they're interested in what's happening in their backyard, but they're interested in what other farmers are experiencing around the state as well. Farmers, while they quote-unquote compete with each other, they like to have that better yield than the farmer next door. They're also very much in support of each other, and they like to know what other farmers are facing. So bringing that news and information is something that they enjoy. They like to know what's going on. We like to talk about what's happening at a national level as well, whether that be from a policy standpoint or whether that be from what conditions they're facing in, you know, Nebraska. I can give you a sneak peek into what you're going to hear tomorrow on WILO. Nebraska farmers facing some serious wildfires right now, and they're in need of some help, in need of some donations. So if you're in a place where you can help and donate, there will be some information on HoosierAgToday.com. That's one of our digital properties you can visit. There will be a link there that you can help donate to the Nebraska cattlemen because they're in bad shape out there right now. Over 500,000 acres right now they've lost to wildfires. So that's the type of information we're trying to bring to farmers across the state. And we really enjoy what we do, and what we do is for farmers across Indiana. It's just kind of our thing. My background is not in agriculture. My background's in radio. I started doing radio over 20 years ago when I was in high school, and found out that I loved it. Once you get that radio bug, you can't get rid of it, right, Melissa? I mean, that's just the way that it goes. It bites you.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I mean, it brought you back, didn't it? Like,
yeah, I went to school for this, and that's what I studied, and then left it and went to farm and raised hogs and cattle and stuff, and then came back to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, once it bites you, it's hard to get away. And you know, the closest I had gotten to agriculture was I emceed a couple of Cass County 4-H Fair Queen contests, which I grew up in Logansport. But I've been so fortunate to get in this position. I worked for Andy Eubank in Logansport. He was my boss there. So when they decided a little over eight years ago now, to expand at Hoosier Ag Today, I talked with Andy, and they brought me in. And it was the best move that I've ever made, because I get to work with the tremendous people that are Indiana agriculture, the farmers, the leaders of the different organizations we have around the state. I'm blessed. And a lot of those farmers have taken me under their wing and taught me so much about what they do and what they fight for, what they stand for. Again, just incredibly blessed to be part of this industry.
Well, and we were talking before we went on air that we just recently lost, I'm going to say, an icon.
Absolutely.
In agricultural broadcasting, and you had an opportunity to meet him. Why don't you talk about that?
So the Big O, Orion Samuelson, for over 60 years was the voice of agriculture for WGN Radio. And WGN Radio used to have just a huge, wide range. And I don't think you can really get WGN around here anymore, but it used to be far and wide. And that was the voice you listened into if you wanted radio news about farming. It was Orion and Max Armstrong. And we lost Orion on Monday this week. And we all kind of knew it was coming. You know, us as farm broadcasters, believe it or not, there is a National Association of Farm Broadcasting. There's a national association of us. Around 170 farm broadcasters are a part of this organization. And he had been missing from the past several conventions, just not doing as well as he'd like to. So we knew it was coming. We just didn't exactly know when. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I knew Orion well, because I didn't. But I did meet him, and it was my first year attending the NAFB convention. I was a farm broadcaster for just under a year. And they didn't have anyone running for the office of vice president for our region. And I thought, well, if I'm going to jump in and be a part of this organization, let's jump in with both feet. Sure, I'll run. So I ran for vice president of the East Region, covering, you know, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, all these states over this way. That obviously it included Illinois and would have been Orion's territory. So he's in this meeting with, you know, the, I don't know, 40 broadcasters that are part of that region. And I talked through why I wanted to do it and just how I explained it to you guys. And after the meeting, he came up to me and he said, "Young man, thank you so much for doing this. This organization is wonderful. You're not going to regret it. And if there's absolutely anything I can do for you, let me know." And he handed me a small piece of paper with a cell phone number on it. And that was the kind of guy that Orion was. And as I hear stories that are circulating now from many of my counterparts across the country, the public will know what kind of tremendous broadcaster Orion Samuelson was. Many of us that met him, and many of my counterparts that knew him well, knew that he was an even better man. He truly was. Just kind. A kind man. So, and the fact that he passed away during National Agriculture Week, he spent his life doing what this week is all about. I mean, advocating for agriculture, trying to make the public aware of what agriculture means to America, what farmers mean to America. I think it's appropriate. I think you know, he's certainly going to be missed, but man, how apropos. I mean, it really is just how great. What a life lived, and what a great man.
I agree. I mean, I can remember, and I didn't grow up on a farm.
Yeah.
I married into it. So, but that was one of the voices I remember as a kid, listening to those farm reports and listening to, and it always fascinated me. So I think that's part of the reason why I gravitated towards somebody who was farming and involved in agriculture. But Yeah, there was just nobody like him.
Yeah, watching the TV show with him and Max. It was just great. It was just great. The guy's a pro. The presence that he had. I mean, even at that first convention, I was like, oh, the big O. Like, whoa. He could command a room. That was for sure.
Well, I know a lot is happening at the state and national level with legislature, and I want to get into that. But I also know you recently just returned from a trip with some of those legislators who went. You went to Africa.
I went to Africa.
You went to learn a lot and see a lot, and I know some were there to teach as well. But what was that like, and what was the actual purpose of the trip?
So I am part of a group that was the Ag Leadership Program through Agri Institute. Agri Institute is a nonprofit organization here in Indiana. They do a number of different things, but their largest program is the Ag Leadership Program, and it's a 2-year program. We do 12 sessions, and 10 of them are around the state of Indiana, and we go around and we learn about different aspects of agriculture in Indiana. One of the sessions is a week-long trip to D.C. We did that last February. And then another one is a 2-week international trip. And that was what this was, this 2-week international trip to Ghana. We did Ghana for a week, and then we did Kenya for a week. And I went around. I actually took a lot of video during this, and my colleague Greg Allen is actually taking that video, and he's putting together a little documentary for us. I think it's going to be tremendous. And I asked everyone, how would you describe this trip? Like, give me one word, give me a phrase of how you would describe this trip. And I think everyone was eye-opening, overwhelming, emotional. It really did hit all of the different aspects and emotions that you could imagine. First off, the level of poverty that you see. And I've told several people this since I've been back, and I'm not meaning it in a funny way, but you know, the Sarah McLachlan commercials that you see on TV, you assume that they're like showing you the worst of the worst to try to gain sympathy, and they want you to donate. From what I could see out there, just about every town we entered, that was the norm. That's what you would see. It really was, you know, there's no underground sewage system over there. It's all kind of open. There's just a ditch over on the side of the road. The level of poverty, it was emotional. It was emotional to see. Their inability to feed themselves at the level that they need to, and that. A number of policy-related things. Right now, you know, the government, they won't accept food that is genetically modified. And they're just now, you know, we went through this fight how long ago with GMOs. And I think maybe the one lesson we learned from that is we should have called it something different, right? We probably should have called it something other than genetically modified. They didn't pick up on that. So they're just having that conversation right now, and they're still calling it genetically modified. It's like, guys, you should have changed the name. And it's the same thing. They don't want that, even though really to feed that population, that's what they're going to need. And there's still no scientific proof of any kind that's been pointed out to me that suggests that things that are GMO are harmful. If someone has it, let me know. I haven't seen it. So there's all of that that's happening over there. I will tell you that one of the things that we really had a realization of is that it might be a little I don't know, it might be a little pompous of us to think that we've got it all figured out and we need to be the ones teaching them everything. And I'm not saying that our farming is bad by any means. I mean, we've got some things figured out over here, right? We feed the world, we feed a nation. We do a pretty good job as a farming community. But one thing I was very impressed by, I think that it was probably what this country was a long time ago, maybe even before I was born. But think about now, where we are in the U.S., and how far removed people are from their food. Like, what percent of the population are actually directly involved with the production of their food? I don't know what that percentage is, but I can't imagine it's very high here in the U.S.
Yeah, it can't be. It can't be. And that's the reason why programs like Farm to Table in our elementary schools are so important, because these kids have no idea where their food comes from.
I mean,
their parents don't.
We legitimately get the comments about, you know, chocolate milk coming from brown cows from U.S. students. I mean, we joke, but that question happens.
Yeah.
Okay? Over there, I mean, the percentage of people involved in food production, it's unbelievably high, because that's what the local economy is. I mean, we went in Ghana to a community where they were planting rice just outside of the little town there. And then you go into the town, and there are 6 different rice mills. Like, that is the local economy. One rice mill, I'm telling you, I wish I had a picture here to show you. There was the mill that was actually processing everything and getting out some of the bad rice and everything else, and they set that off to the side to do other things with it. But then there were, it had to be at least 75 women that were lined up in chairs that had bags of rice, and people would come up to them wanting scoops of that rice. They were there to sell it. And what we found out is that, you know, those chairs that were all around there, they would change chairs every day. Like, they would move up a chair every day so that they could have a prime seat. And, like, you get the best chair, the one that's right up there in front, one day. The next day, you go all the way to the back. You just move a chair up so that you can have that prime spot to try to sell your rice. And it's that's the local economy. So how far are people removed from food production here in the U.S. compared to what it is over there? That's the local economy. And frankly, I mean, that's somewhat impressive. Again, I'm not saying everybody's got it all figured out. There are probably problems with both systems. It really was. It was impressive. It was interesting to see, and certainly an eye-opening experience. It was a once-in-a-lifetime thing that I don't think I'll ever forget. A number of eye-opening experiences.
How many folks are in your leadership group that made that trip?
There were 28 of us that went on that trip. So a large group, and it spanned all different types of ag leaders. We had bank lenders that were a part of that group. We had a few farmers that were a part of that group. Some folks that worked at Elanco, one at Corteva, Beck's Hybrids. I mean, just Keystone Cooperative, Premier Cooperative. I mean, just it spanned a lot of different industries, and some government officials as well. So, yeah, I'm sitting here talking for forever, and I'm going long here, but man, it goes by so quick, because this was just such a fantastic trip, and absolutely life changing. you just think about the global perspective a little bit differently.
If you could do it over, would you rather go to Africa first, then go to D.C. second?
I don't know. I mean, I spent enough time in D.C. I'll get there. Yeah. It. I mean, the fact of the matter is, they're not willing to accept a lot of what we would offer. So that makes it hard. And they did. The government officials that we met with, they had a lot of questions for us about how we do things. But there wasn't a language gap, because English is their official language. But the way we were explaining things, there was a gap, because they just don't know. We're just years ahead of where they are. And that doesn't mean that they're going to get to where we are years from now. They might decide to take a different path. I think there's just a misunderstanding of how we do things versus how they want to, of where they want to get. So it needs a lot more time and attention. But I think that we could probably learn from each other more than we could dictate to either one.
Well, going back to with what you saw and the global impacts that you've seen over the years, let's go back to legislation. You've seen it at the state level. You've talked to representatives and senators states on the state side, but you've also seen it in Washington and seen what's going on there. Let's talk about some of the things that you're seeing coming down the pipeline in both.
Yeah. Right now at the national level, I'll tell you the big news is from a farm bill standpoint. And the farm bill, boy, let's talk about the existing farm bill. It's from 2018. And these are four-year farm bills. So this thing would have expired initially in 2022. Here we are in 2026. It's now doubled its lifespan. In this case, that's not a good thing. Okay, so we've got prices that are going back to 2018. All right, that's not really a good thing. Just think about inflation alone since then. It's time for this thing to get updated. It's been time for this thing to get updated. They've updated bits and pieces of it. We need a whole new one. It's all got to get done. The House Ag Committee was able to get something done. I don't know where this actually came from. It's like somebody got a spur up their behind, and we got this done quick. Chairman Thompson, G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, the chairman of the House Ag Committee, Republican, he just kind of up and decided one day, we're doing this. And it wasn't long after that that we had a bill. It was marked up. Democrats and Republicans in the House Ag Committee had their disagreements, and they had them quickly. And then it was voted on in a bipartisan way. Seven Democrats from the House Ag Committee did vote in favor of it. There were some contentious issues. One, that it didn't include a fix for year-round E15. That was something that Democrats were actually wanting to have in there. Though I think it's been this whole time Democrats kind of holding that back. It's weird to me how that is going down. And we can talk about that in a moment. But it's just strange how all that happened and how it just happened so quickly. But now we have that out of the committee, and it's up for a vote in the House. The problem with all of this is that now we're hearing from the Senate Ag Chairman, John Bozeman, a Republican from Arkansas, that, oh, that's great, we'll have our version out in the next few months. That's an awful long time. Like,
yeah.
And why can't we pick up with the version that just came through the House? Because now if you introduce your own, now we've got to reconcile it. It's got to go back that way. This one's got to go back. The reason they can't do that is because he sees the writing on the wall that there's something in that House Ag bill that isn't going to get enough votes in the Senate. If I had to guess, it might be the fix for Prop 12.
Yeah.
Prop 12 in California, the confinement restrictions that California has put in place on pork producers, that if you want to sell pork in California, you have to have these confinement restrictions in place. Wider pens. They want more space for the pigs, which, by the way, has been proven to be more dangerous for both the pigs and for the people that are working with the pigs.
Yeah.
It's a bad situation.
Yeah.
And it costs producers about $4,500 per sow to make those changes in their operation. And for consumers in California, cuts of pork have increased by 20 to 40%, depending on the cut. So now we have, you know, low-income houses in California unable to purchase pork. Who is this really benefiting? My guess is that's going to be the holdup in the Senate, and that's why they need to introduce their own, and it's going to need to be reconciled. And if you think that this thing is going to get done before the extension of that 2018 Farm Bill, it runs through September 30th. I've got a hunch they're going to have to extend it again because this thing isn't going to get through. And here we go, just kicking that proverbial can down the road.
Yeah.
Again.
Where nobody can work together.
Yeah.
It, it gets so frustrating, and I just seem to clean house all the way around. But
it is frustrating. It was nice to see that there was some bipartisanship in this vote in the House Ag Committee.
Well, and they had had a bill previous to that that was an actual bipartisan bill, too, and it was like it went nowhere. So I don't know if that's the same one that he was able to...
It was a little different. It was a little
revise
different.
Revise it, but, you know...
That one was pretty well shut down in the previous Congress by Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, who's no longer in her position as ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee or chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. We just haven't been able to get anything done for years now. And there are plenty of people to blame along the way. We can't get along. So we can't get anything done. And you can blame that on whatever side you want. We just can't get along and get anything done. And this is the case with year-round E15 as well. I was listening to AgriTalk on my way in here and listening to Chip Flory and the farmers talk about this. Gene Millard was one of those farmers in Nebraska. Gene and I go way back, too. He's a farm broadcaster as well. This is one of these things that everyone should be okay with. Republicans, historically, are in favor of helping farmers. Year-round E15 will help farmers sell more corn, period. Democrats are worried about emissions and environmental issues. E15 emissions are better than that of E10, which is what the standard is now. The emissions are better. But there's a rule on the books right now preventing E15 from being sold year-round because of the emissions. So think about that. The emissions are better than what the standard is now, but there is a law that says you can't sell them in the summer because of the emissions. That doesn't make a ton of sense. And for some reason, Democrats and Republicans can't come together on this, even though they should both be in support of this. The only reason I think that they wouldn't be is because one side maybe wants to go even farther than E15, and one side wants to go even farther on the environmental side, wants to go to electric vehicles, which, by the way, if you go down that rabbit hole of how bad that is for the environment on the back end of production, that's a different conversation for a different day. But this, right now, could reduce emissions and help farmers. Why can't we come to an agreement? I don't know. They were talking on AgriTalk earlier about this potential bill that's going through, or that could be coming through the Senate, that's really talking about the war, quote-unquote war, whatever you want to call it, that's happening in Iran right now. It's impacting fertilizer prices because the Strait of Hormuz is kind of the fertilizer hub of the Middle East. Fertilizer prices for farmers here. You want to talk about the biggest issue facing growers this season? It's probably going to be that. It's probably going to be, did you buy your fertilizer before all this or not?
And diesel fuel.
Absolutely. So that is an issue, and now they're talking about another bill that could provide some relief for farmers because of this quote-unquote war that's happening in Iran. They're thinking that might be an opportunity for this year-round E15 to come along with that and go through as well. We could hope. We could hope that's the case. So at the national level,
it's still a mess.
It's a mess. And you know, thankfully, and again, be on whatever side of the aisle you want to be on. I often tell people this. At Hoosier Ag Today, people are used to media companies being far right, far left, whatever. We are far agriculture. That's what we are. I don't care where the idea comes from. If it's a good idea for agriculture, we're going to cover it. And
yeah.
That's what we're about. If it helps farmers, we're going to cover it. So be on whatever side of the aisle you want to be on. It just so happens that here in Indiana, we pretty well have a supermajority on the right. And we do have two congressmen that are on the House Ag Committee in Jim Baird and Mark Messmer. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a great job representing agriculture.
they are. So hopefully I'll get the chance to talk to Jim here soon. Unfortunately for Jim, he just lost his wife not
right.
long ago.
Yeah, he was actually going to come on with us on Party Line, and he lost his wife. And
yeah, we've been praying for him and his son Bo. I mean, they're good people, and may his wife Denise rest in peace. But you know, we'll talk to Jim at some point and see where can this farm bill go.
Yeah,
is there even a remote chance that this farm bill becomes the final version? We could hope.
I'm going to assume that somebody out there is working, not necessarily the Senate, but I'm going to assume somebody out there is working on a backup plan just in case this one doesn't go through, that they're already putting another one in the works that they can step up with. But again, like you said, nobody wants to get along. Nobody wants to work together. They don't want to. The word compromise no longer exist in Washington.
My way or the highway.
Yep.
Which isn't really how you govern.
Nope.
So, I'll tell you, quickly on the state level, agriculture wasn't a huge priority during this short session that was made even shorter by the redistricting conversation. There were some ag bills that were out there. I think that this year in particular, for organizations like Indiana Farm Bureau and the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, their membership and policy committee, this year was more about the bills that got killed than the bills that went through. Because there were some bad bills that did get killed. House Bill 1333, that number became very toxic there at the State House. And quite frankly, it was filed with really good intentions. I know Representative Culp. I've known him quite well, and I know he's a farmer. He's for farmers. That bill was filed with good intentions, and then it quickly turned into a bad bill after several amendments. It went from trying to save some prime farmland into a data center bill. And that happened like almost overnight. Now, was the original bill perfect? No, it wasn't perfect. But most of them aren't. So that eventually got killed, and that's a good thing. And I think that Kendall Culp would tell you that. It was a good thing that it got killed. There were others that got killed that it was a good thing. One bill that did get killed, and then the language got resurrected in another bill that I think is good news for agriculture. It's in House Bill 1249 now that the governor did sign last week. And this was talking about drones. And it was its own bill, and it didn't even make it out of the chamber. But Indiana Farm Bureau was pretty steadfast with this one, and they kept trying to find a bill to stick it in, this language about, we can't allow unauthorized drones to be flying over Indiana farmland, cropland, barns, livestock barns, because up in Northeast Indiana, where we have been having a serious issue with avian influenza, those farmers saw drones flying over their poultry barns, spraying something, disappearing. And then a couple days later, lo and behold, they have avian flu. And it's like, can we substantiate that that's what it was from? No. But it's weird, right? Mm-hmm. And should drones really be allowed to be around there anyway? No, they really shouldn't. So let's get rid of this. You know, when all this was happening, they were trying to figure out, who do we call? Do we call the cops? Well, the cops say, we can't do anything. Local sheriff's office, we don't have anything we can do about it. Call the FAA. Sorry, there's nothing we can do. Now there's a law. They buried it deep in House Bill 1249. The bill is just titled Various Criminal Matters. It's in with a whole bunch of other criminal stuff. I couldn't even tell you what's in it, but you cannot fly an unauthorized drone over cropland, poultry barns, that type of thing anymore. You can call the sheriff's office. Presumably they can do something about it. have heard there are some questions about whether or not that trumps federal law and what the FAA has in there. That'll have to be a conversation for another day, but at least farmers have some sort of recourse. Call the sheriff's office. Let's see what they can do.
Well, I know we ran a little long.
Sorry about that.
No,
I tend to do
no,
that.
No, that's perfectly fine.
You put a microphone in front of me, Melissa. This is bound to happen.
He's going to ask you to come and co-host next year, so just get ready.
You're going to have to have me back on National Radio Day so I can come, you know, spin some tunes and DJ. I haven't done that in about 20
years.
Well,
that's true. That's true. That would be fun. That would be fun. No, Eric, I appreciate you coming in. Again, we've been talking with Eric Pfeiffer, President and News Director of Hoosier Ag Today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day, because we even talked that if something broke in the news that you'd have to run, and we'd be doing this while you're driving. But I thank you for coming. Lots more to talk about, so yeah, we got to get you back on the air so that we can talk about everything and anything agriculture.
I'd be happy to come back anytime. You know how to find me, and thank you for inviting me. Ag Day, farmers, again, we do what we do for you because, gosh, you guys are the backbone. You're the backbone of Indiana. You're the backbone of our country. Today we celebrate you. I like to think we celebrate you every day. But today, this week especially.
Give them the website again. I know they can go there to sign up for the newsletter if they're not already getting it.
Absolutely. HoosierAgToday.com. You can find us on Facebook and X at Hoosier Ag Today. You can find us on YouTube at Hoosier Ag Today and the number one, because apparently someone else was at Hoosier Ag Today. I don't know who would have done that to us.
Well, that's all right, but you put one in there, so that means you're the first.
Amen.
Right? All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Austin Pearson, climatologist from Purdue University and Indiana State Climate Office. This has been Ag Day on WILO, Boone 1027, and HoosierLandTV.com.